What is up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our brand new sponsor, Fortune. It favors the bold, the strong, the brave. For your business to break out of anything holding you back, you need business checking as brave as you are. And that's where Novo Business Checking comes in. Novo is a powerful, simple business checking. And unlike the traditional banking model, Novo has no minimum balance, no transaction limits, and no hidden fees. Instead of a one-size-fits-all approach, Novo is customized to your business to save you time and free up cash flow with seamless integrations to Stripe, Shopify, QuickBooks Online, and more. Sign up for Novo for free and join the community of over 150,000 fearless small businesses who found the customizable business checking solution that admires their brave. You can sign up for your free business checking account right now at novo.co/iLab. Plus, Invest Like a Boss listeners get access to over $5,000 in perks and discounts. So just go to novo.co/iLab and sign up for free. I'm going to tell you even more about Novo during the break in the show, but like I said, one more time, you can check them out right now at novo.co/iLab. Novo Platform Incorporated is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services provided by Middlesex Federal Savings FA, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. All right, let's kick off this episode.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Invest Like a Boss, episode 227. I'm Johnny, and I am in Kiev, Ukraine. Just talking to Derek. How you doing, buddy?
Wait a minute, Johnny. The deal was you were just going to hop into Lviv and hop back out and get a little snapshot of what's going on. How'd you end up back in Kiev?
I know what the deal was, Derek, but I was so confident that I wasn't going to come to Kiev. And maybe I was even trying to force myself not to come or not be tempted, that I didn't bring my house keys to my apartment in Kiev, and I didn't bring my laptop charger.
So you're implying by you didn't bring your house keys, and this sounds like you're setting up a story that you're actually in your apartment, though.
Yeah, I am.
I was like, there's no way you could go there and not visit your place. You got to see what's going on.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I got an offer where, you know, somebody wanted to show me, you know... I mean, basically, they just said, like, it would be good if you come here. And they offered to pick me up. And I said, okay, let's do it. And I knew I had a lockbox that, you know, I use kind of for backup or to, like, let contractors in. I was going to use for Airbnb in the future with an extra set of keys. So I knew I'd be okay.
So this is what's kind of... confuse me here, since obviously in our lifetime we've never really gone through anything like this. I just kind of find it fascinating that life kind of still goes, obviously life isn't normal, but it still goes on. You still have to, you know, you still have to eat, maybe go to a restaurant. Are there stores just open, or what's it kind of look like compared to maybe a year ago?
So in Lviv, which is the western city, you know, it's very close to Poland. That's life is completely normal. Like literally everything is open. Shopping malls are open. You know, probably the movie theater is open. The only thing that is ironically closed is, I'll let you guess. It's a place that was heavily sanctioned, you know, by the U.S. And they said we're going to close all of our places in Russia.
Oh, I know. Okay. I'm ready.
What is it?
McDonald's.
Yes.
So,
this big thing about it, right? They didn't mention that they also pulled out of Ukraine.
That's interesting. As I wonder if that's maybe to protect their image, like in case something did happen to it. They don't want the press.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's just they're afraid of damage or, like, you know, their employees dying in the war. Or I don't know what it is. Maybe supply chain issues. But it's like it's kind of messed up, right? Because, you know, it's not Ukraine's fault, you know, that they're being attacked. And there's no sanctions against Ukraine. But McDonald's pulled out of Ukraine. And I've heard they haven't actually closed all their stores in Russia. they've left all the franchise owned ones open.
See, that's interesting, because I don't think as a corporation, I don't know their exact franchise rules, but they're only limited to how much power they really can have over their franchisees.
Yeah, but they could easily just decline to ship them more products and more packaging.
Well, if there's one thing we've learned, even during this war, is that money pretty much trumps everything.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah, in Lviv, everything was open. But in Kyiv, life is just starting to come back. You know, I would say 1 out of 20 restaurants are open. You know, 1 out of 4 supermarkets are open. So you can get everything you need. You just, you know, you have less options, but it's kind of, you know, capitalism at its best, right? You know, you have a limited amount of people living here still or coming back, and stores and restaurants will slowly open to meet that demand.
Well, speaking of capitalism at its best, I just got back last night from a trip to Las Vegas. And let me tell you, Vegas is back. It was packed. Like, it was definitely pre-COVID levels. All the guys with the strip club cards are out there flipping the cards, because those clubs were closed for a long time because of COVID. I think that was kind of the last thing that opened back up. And now it's like full Sin City back on again.
Wow. So one thing I've heard about Vegas, and you can probably confirm this, is the business model has changed, where for the last, you know, 10 or 20 years, drinks were basically free or really cheap because they made all their money from gambling. But I've heard now not that many people gamble anymore because, you know, casinos are pretty much legal everywhere. There's sports betting everywhere in the world.
Honestly, I think the sports betting is more popular than ever because it has opened up. So if you go by the sports books in these places, the sports books are packed, but the slot machines are not. Okay. You can get on a slot machine pretty much anywhere. I think a lot of people started to catch on to the slot machine game. And yeah, drinks, they're less than LA, where I live here in LA. Which average drink probably in LA is about $20. You still get a drink in Vegas for 10 to 15, but it's by no means cheap.
Well, you know, it's funny because last night I had a dinner with our buddy, Dan Leal, AKA Porno Dan. And we went to a sushi and pizza restaurant. It's kind of weird mix called Mafia. And I bet him that if we ordered $30 worth of sushi, that we wouldn't be able to finish it. And there was 6 of us eating.
For $30, 6 of you ate sushi.
Yeah. And we had leftovers.
I don't think even one person can get $30 of sushi and be full here.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it was the kind of the cheapest. It wasn't the cheapest, but like it was one of the cheapest sushi places in Ukraine.
And this, let me guess, lots of cream cheese.
Yeah. They love Philadelphia.
Well, I thought I was getting a good deal. I stayed at the Venetian and I got it for $150 a night, which that place is usually minimum $300 a night. Until I talked to our guests this week.
Yeah.
Did you know, Johnny, that you've actually met our guest that is on the show this week?
Yeah. I met him a few times. I think I met him in Chiang Mai once, and I met him maybe in Ukraine again as well.
Yeah, I think he said he kind of got into drop shipping, and that's how he met you. But he didn't do it a lot because it wasn't really his thing. But while he was at one of those conferences, he was, you know, just, you know, random conversation when you meet new people, they go, you know, what do you do? And he just said, I travel the world for free. And they were like, wait a minute, you do what? And then they're like, you need to make this a business. This is like your thing. If you can figure out how to travel for free and share that information with other people, that's your business model.
No, I think, thinking back, I think it was we met at the Nomad Summit conference, which is kind of like a general conference for digital nomads. And, you know, dropshipping was probably like one of the topics, but it's basically like it's like a brainstorming session with like 200 people. So yeah, I can see why there he probably spoke to some people and they're like, you know what, why don't you do this?
Yeah. So if you guys don't know what we're talking about, I think everyone's familiar with points and mileage programs. But if you're like me, you just kind of thought, oh, that just sounds like more trouble than it's worth. And I've just kind of recently started dipping my toes into utilizing miles more properly instead of just taking a percentage cash back card. And it's not as difficult as I thought. And you can get some amazing trips out of it, especially flights. It sounds like flights are the key to really cashing in on these credit card points. Johnny, do you have any experience really utilizing the points programs?
You know, I'm actually part of the Million Mile Club.
What exactly is the Million Mile Club? I know a million miles will get you a lot of stuff, but is like an actual club?
Well, I don't think it's a club, but
I was like, what am I missing out on here?
Yeah, but at a certain point, I had a million miles. So I definitely was flying business class a lot, you know, during those years, you know, especially for long haul flights, because I was flying from LA or San Francisco over to Thailand, you know, probably twice a year. And my goal was to always fly business class. So yeah, I'm definitely familiar with the credit card hacking and the points and the rewards and all that. But to be honest, I hate all those guys, the points guy, which, you know, the whatever other guys, you know, like I hate their systems. And we can get, you know, we can get into in the outro more, but I've always thought of it as a full-time job that it just, like, if you spent the same amount of time and energy doing all that, you could have just made more money with actual business. But Trevor, I actually like his system. It's a little bit different than what the other guys do. And I think that if you're American and you listen to this episode, you're going to 100% start considering doing this. And if you're not American, you're going to be so jealous and envious what we have as bonus signups.
Yeah, his name's Trevor Wright. His company is called Mile Method. And he definitely has some thoughts on the points, guys. So let's hear about that and all these amazing trips that he's taken for like pennies on the dollar. And like Johnny said, his system's a little different. You know, you don't have to spend like $200,000 a year on your credit card to get these points. So let's find out how Trevor does it in the interview.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Novo. Now, you heard me talk about them at the top of the show, why they are a simple, free business checking solution that is fully customizable. But your dream business checking solution should be built just for you. And that's what Novo is all about. First of all, when you submit your application at novo.co/iLab, it takes less than 10 minutes. And they are fully FDIC insured through Middlesex Federal Savings, FA. They have easy transfers, ACH transfers, they're free, mail checks, incoming wires, no hidden fees means you'll never be surprised by a fee again. With so many seamless integrations, fans call Novo the Swiss Army knife of business checking accounts. And Novo's customer service, it's actual humans. They're here to help you get started and they'll be with you as your business grows. So if you want to sign up for your free business checking account right now, just go to novo.co/ILAB. Plus, Invest Like a Boss listeners, you're going to get access over $5,000 in perks and discounts. So head over to novo.co/ILAB. One more time, you can sign up free when you go to novo.co/ILAB. Novo Platform Incorporated, it is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services provided by Middlesex Federal Savings, FA, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Back here on Invest Like a Boss, a really exciting subject, not just for myself, but I think a lot of you bosses out there are going to like what our guest has to say. His name is Trevor Wright. He's from Mile Method. He's going to tell us all about how to maximize those rewards, points, and miles and travel for basically free. At least I hope that's what we're going to find out. Trevor, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here. I'm jealous of your radio voice. I've done a few of these podcasts, and whenever I hear someone that has the voice, I wish I had it.
I appreciate it. You sound good. So tell us about your background and how you discovered, you know, it's obviously out there. You don't have to discover it, but actually utilizing the points programs to your advantage. When did this come about?
Oh, it's hard to compress so many different lives into a summary, but as far as the miles and points, what I do, it is unique because it's a service. A lot of people know that there's blogs and articles where you can read about all this information. But through certain turns of events, I work directly one-on-one with clients. So it all started love of travel. When I was in high school, I studied abroad in Spain, which made me want to study abroad in Costa Rica and Mexico during university. Then I worked for a study abroad company, realized that I don't actually like office jobs. And I saved up money during that study abroad job to do a South America bicycle trip. I bicycled from Colombia to Argentina, really more like a backpacker style, just money in the bank, traveling as cheaply as possible by bicycle. And during that trip, I became aware of, you know, digital nomad type people that make money while they travel, but also these magical people, mythical creatures that travel around the world for free. So this was 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And I just deep dived it. I just became very involved in different forums, learning how to do this. And I've been doing it for myself, traveling the world, averaging $16 per flight to 133 countries since 2011. And as a business with thousands of people since 2014.
So you've flown to 133 countries for less than, let's say, $50 a flight.
Yeah, because I say $16 per flight, but let's say you're flying to Asia and that's maybe two connections, so that's three flights. So that's still under $50 from the US to Asia.
Wow.
So yes, it is pretty, and that can even be business class and first class sometimes. The taxes tend to be higher on business and first class. But it is pretty incredible, you know, how cheaply you can travel, and not only how cheaply, but how you can upgrade your travels with free hotels, business class, first class, once you have these miles and points.
That is really interesting. Let's just break down for people who aren't familiar how points programs actually work. Let's get into that. And then you can kind of give us some hacks on how to maximize these things. So one thing that's always kind of perplexed me, and I've just started to maybe realize that I should be taking better advantage of points. I'll get into that in a little bit later. The problem is it feels so overly complicated. Every company has a different system, whether it's points, miles, and every value of these points seems to be different because 1 point doesn't equal $1, which would make it simple. It's a complicated algorithm that I think they do on purpose to really confuse us. What's an actual dollar value of a point or a mile at these companies?
So what you just said can be true if you really dig into the details of all of this, but it doesn't have to be. So to be honest, I pay very little attention to the actual, you know, cent per mile value of different types of programs, because those valuations in the end, they don't really matter. I like to keep things simple for myself, for my clients. So I think a better way to think about this, because the absolute best way to accumulate miles and points is credit card sign-up bonuses. Mm-hmm. So instead of digging into, you know, what is the value of a single American Airlines mile, or what is the value of a single United mile? Those are details that aren't necessarily that important. I like to explain to people that a single credit card sign-up bonus could be a, just as one example, because you can use them all over the world, could be a US to Europe one-way business class flight. So that's a single sign-up bonus, which might be anywhere from 50 to 150,000 miles. Let's just say 60,000 miles.
Okay.
And that same business class one-way might cost $5,000 to $7,000. So that, I think, is much more compelling and simpler than trying to decipher all the different valuations that don't really matter.
Okay. And then what about expiration? So if it takes me 2 years to accumulate enough points to get a flight, am I going to lose my points? What is the expiration policies of a lot of these points?
It's really a non-issue. So for example, right now, between my parents and I, because I also manage their sign-up bonuses and help them with all this, we have 7 million miles right now. And we've been traveling for over a decade. And my parents only fly business class now. So I'm not concerned at all that those 7 million miles are going to disappear, because the great majority of the programs, let's just say 95% of them, their miles and points can be, they either don't expire or they can be easily extended with any activity. So what's activity? If you spend a single dollar on a co-branded card, so let's say you have a Citibank American Airlines credit card, mm-hmm. American Airlines miles expire within 18 months if there's no activity. But if you spend $1 on the Citibank American Airlines credit card, it just resets the 18-month clock.
Gotcha. So once a year, stop and get a coffee, put it on the card.
Yeah. And even if you don't have that card, you can also buy 1,000 miles for, I think, $27. There's all these very simple things you can do to extend your miles. So it's really a non-issue.
All right. That's really good to know. So it sounds like you're using this for flights. Is that where points and miles contain the most value, or is it maybe hotels, rental cars, any other kind of perks that you can use to maximize your miles, or are flights kind of like the best value?
In general, if you're really trying to maximize the value of your sign-up bonuses, it's flights, definitely.
Okay.
And not only that, business class and first class, because that's where you know, some of these business class flights, like I said, are $5,000 to $7,000 per one way. And you can redeem a single bonus that you paid $95 for. So you're essentially paying a $95 annual fee, perhaps if it's upfront, for a $7,000 flight. So that's incredible value.
It kind of perplexes me though, because I feel like these airlines, their highest margins have to be on business class and first class. Wouldn't it benefit them just to give out coach seats instead?
Well, the business class costs more miles. So using that same example from the US to Europe, even anywhere in the US, let's say even the West Coast from Los Angeles to anywhere in Europe, that's generally 30,000 miles one way. That's economy.
Okay.
But if you want to fly business, they just charge more miles. So it might be anywhere from 55,000 miles to 70,000 miles. So it's double the price. But that economy flight might cost only $800, the revenue fare, the regular fare.
Mm-hmm.
But the business class costs $5,000 to $7,000.
So right. It's quite a bit more. Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So in your experience, what airlines have you found that are the most generous when it comes to reward points and getting the most value for your money? Any that stand out?
I think it's important to remember that it's the banks, it's the credit card companies that give out these bonuses. And then how you redeem them, it really depends on your travel destination, your route, whether you want to fly economy or business class or even first class. Some airlines are better than others. You know, for example, Southwest has what's called dynamic pricing. So the amount of points required to book a Southwest flight, they kind of track with the regular paid fare. So it's really hard to game Southwest for outsized value. Whereas you can with other airlines, again, especially if booking business class. So it's hard to answer that because it depends on your routes. You know, if you're
sure. So, well, let me ask you this then on that note. So you're saying that, let's say I want to book a Southwest flight for $500 today. That flight goes up to $600 tomorrow. So the equivalent point value would have risen as well tomorrow. So the points would go up equally to the same percentage as the actual retail price did.
Yes. And that's why it's not, if you have a Southwest credit card, you don't actually want to be spending to earn Southwest points. You should be earning to spend a point or mile with a program that's not dynamic. So,
but let's take a Delta or any other airline. If that had happened with that airline where the flight went up in retail price tomorrow, my point value is still going to be the same though. Is that what you're saying?
Depends on the program. So a lot of programs, let's say, even if you're booking a last minute flight, I have some actually recently, I had a client who needed to fly to Australia because unfortunately his mother was sick and she did actually pass away. So he needed a last minute ticket. It was an emergency. Mm-hmm. So generally a last minute regular fare goes up because the airlines, you know, they know that you have to travel. They're going to try to squeeze you for as much money as they can.
Yep.
But the actual mile redemption value can stay the same. So the fare price goes way through the roof if you have to fly tomorrow, but it still might only be, you know, 40,000 miles, whether you book 6 months in advance or a night in advance.
So that's a major benefit
of miles and points, is that you can book last minute flights and save a lot of money.
That's great, because someone who's last minute like myself and ends up doing travel a day or two in advance, I think that's really good to know. So one more note on these flights that I'm really curious to know is, obviously COVID, the pandemic, it was a worldwide phenomenon that, you know, potentially could happen again, but it hasn't happened in the history of any of these airlines, and they lost a lot of business. So are they starting to restrict points flights or dramatically raising the amount of points it takes to fly? What are you seeing since COVID has hit to affect the bottom line of these businesses?
So I guess my answer might be two part. What happened during this pandemic, whatever you believe happened in the past 2 years, it did cause an inflationary environment. You know, as people in the US are realizing, prices are going up for food, for gas, for all different types of products. And those same supply demand inflation dynamics are happening with airlines. So there was people were not traveling and now they are. So the demand is increasing. And because there's more demand, yes, certain routes, they are now requiring more miles. And the reason I say it's a two-part answer is the way around that is to have so many miles and points with different programs that it doesn't affect you. So it's just like inflation doesn't necessarily affect you if you're filthy rich, because it just doesn't matter. You have so much money. If prices go up, you don't really feel it. Whereas someone who is poor, a 5% increase is going to hurt a lot. So if you have different miles and points with many different programs, let's say you want to fly from LA to New York, you check the availability with American Airlines and it's bad value. Let's say they're charging a lot of miles. You might be able to check that exact same route with Delta, United, JetBlue, whatever other airline flies that route, to book it for less. So that's the key of all of this, is you want to have as many miles and points as possible with as many different programs to increase your options.
That totally makes sense. Let's jump into the actual cards. And you had mentioned introductory sign-up offers. One thing I find is that these offers vary widely for even the same card. So how do you find the best sign-up offer for a card and not feel like you got burned? We had a little talk in the Boss Lounge, just our Facebook group for Invest Like a Boss, which is how we kind of got introduced to each other. Yeah. And I recently signed up for a card and you said, well, I could have got you an offer to get even more points. So now I feel really jaded. How do you find the best offer for a sign up?
I hope I didn't throw it in your face just like that. But I think your offer was the American Express Platinum card for 125,000 bonus.
That's correct.
And
you told me you could have got me 150.
I tried to politely point out that you missed out on 25,000 points, which is, you know, a US domestic round trip, basically.
One last trip for me this year, I guess.
Yeah, so that does happen quite a bit. That's why I think my service is valuable, because I'm just constantly looking out for that for my clients. To answer your question more directly, the only way you can really be aware of all the best bonuses is if you're paying attention. So you do have to research, you have to kind of read the blogs. And because one thing about this weird miles and points world is that it changes constantly. That's why I'm still doing a service and not some type of online course or writing a blog, is that it just changes all the time. So you have to pay attention. That's it.
That's good. And I guess it's a good thing that we got guys like you checking up on that stuff. Speaking of these blogs and everything else, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there is one particular blog that I'm sure most people are familiar with that is, I guess, could be sort of a competitor to you. But when I see their posts, they're loaded with affiliate links. And I don't know that the general public really understands how affiliate links work, and that, you know, they're getting paid to post these incredible offers or what they state are incredible offers. What do you kind of think about these other sites and blogs? Maybe I don't want to say they're taking advantage of people, but they're definitely using a situation to their advantage. Any thoughts on these other sites that are posting affiliate links to sign up and working with the credit card companies?
I have many, many thoughts on these different blogs. One, you can't hate on it. It's an incredible business model. So they make a lot of money. I'm at a hotel right now in Belize. I'm staying at a Hilton. You know, if I'm at the bar and people inevitably say, hey, what do you do? It's like, oh, I help Americans travel for free. And they always bring up the points guy because his SEO is incredible. He's all over the internet. If you search anything related to miles and points, points guy, he's everywhere. So it's a corporation. I think he has hundreds of employees, you know.
He has to with the reach out there.
They have millions of monthly readers. And some of these credit card affiliate links pay anywhere from $50 to $400 each, I believe. So it is an incredible business model. They're making a lot of money. So I don't hate on the game, because congratulations to him and his corporation. But the reason I'm still doing a less lucrative, more time consuming business model with one-on-one service for my clients is that it is superior in every way, because I can customize the bonuses to my clients' application history, their cancellation history, their spending habits, their upcoming destinations. And to make a final comment, I guess, on these blogs is they are not always ethical, because the links that they have that give them commissions, they may not be the highest available signup bonus. So they might write some article telling you that there's this incredible once in a lifetime opportunity. You should apply for this card immediately so you can travel for free, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. They're very good at marketing. And then they promote a credit card with a 50,000 mile signup bonus, knowing perfectly well that there may be a 75,000 signup bonus. So,
but they're not going to get paid for that one. So
they don't get paid for the 75,000 signup bonus. So it is a very weird thing. And I don't approve, obviously, of that unethical business practice. But you can learn a lot from those blogs, especially on the redemption side. But anytime they tell you to sign up for a credit card, just know that there may be a better offer. And that offer may not be the best for you, because maybe you want to travel to Asia and that bonus is best for travel to Latin America. There's a lot of different variables involved.
That's great. That's really great to know. I think, you know, PointsGuy and other blogs like that, they have a lot of great information. Just everyone should be aware of the links they're clicking, because they're getting paid for those. So just be really mindful of that when you're reading that information. Yes. One thing we definitely have to bring up is a concern that I think a lot of people are going to have. You're asking people to sign up for credit cards, and essentially more in the eyes of the banks or the credit agencies, more debt, even though you may not be charging to them, it can definitely affect your credit score. So what do you advise to someone that's worried about ruining their credit score by signing up for these cards?
This is also a multiple part answer. So there is no, on my website, milemethod.com, there is no buy now button, because I need to pre-screen every single potential client to see if they're eligible. And in my eligibility survey, there's a question: do you have credit card debt? So if anyone has credit card debt, you need to focus on paying that down. That's a huge red flag. You should not be applying for more credit cards. You need to get your finances in order before you start thinking about traveling and spending money and all of that. So
we're 100% in agreement there. If you listen to Invest Like a Boss, you probably shouldn't have debt, but we know we have a lot of people that are just kind of finding the show recently too. Number one thing is get rid of that debt for sure.
Never carry balances on your credit cards, pay them off in full every month, all of that. So I will address the question you said about credit scores. So there are so many different myths about how applying for credit cards affects your credit scores, and I've heard them all. So the main things you need to keep in mind is that applying for multiple credit cards does not hurt your credit scores if you do it properly. So what does doing it properly mean? Never missing payments, always paying off your balances in full every month. And then a lot of people believe that when you, the hard inquiries, so every time you apply for a new credit card, it's called a hard inquiry, where the bank or the credit card company pulls your credit report. And then they kind of look at your overall credit profile to see if you're credit worthy. So when they do a hard query on your credit report, it can potentially ding your credit score 1 to 3 points per application. And that even depends, depending on how long your credit history is and a lot of different factors. But the reason that hard inquiries are just a minor, almost non-issue, is that if you're applying for credit cards the proper way and paying off your balances in full every month, your debt to credit ratio improves. So what is the debt to credit ratio? If you're approved for a new credit card, a personal card, they may give you a $10,000 credit line. So if you're constantly applying for new cards, one gives you a 10,000, one gives you 5,000, another one gives you 20,000, your credit is increasing, but your debt is staying zero. So the positive benefits of your improved debt to credit ratio, it kind of cancels out the minor negative effect of the hard inquiries. And I hope that's not too technical. Maybe rewind if you need to hear that again.
No, I think that definitely makes sense. And I've also noticed when after applying for something, my credit score will drop. But if you don't have any debt and you're paying everything on time, it'll quickly, even those few points you lost, it'll quickly recover.
And normally around 90 days later, that's about how long it takes for the improved debt to credit ratio to cancel out the minor negative effect of the hard inquiries. And that's why with my own method, we apply for new cards, one or two or even three, depending on the client, about every 90 days, because you want to let that debt to credit ratio benefit kick in.
Okay. So let's say I sign up for a card. I got my 100,000 points or whatever it may be. I used up all those points and traveled the world, got some awesome trips in. Is that card worthless to me? Do I close it? Do I keep it open? What's the plan after you've signed up, used your miles? What's next?
So depending on the card, you may want to keep it, cancel, or downgrade. So those are all the options. You keep it, you cancel, or you downgrade. So generally, the only cards that are worth keeping are the ones that have some type of outsized benefit. So that may be a business card that has some type of multiplier for your business spend. I think a lot of your audience has maybe online advertising with Facebook or Google. And there's certain cards where you can actually get 3 to 5 points per dollar spent for ad spend.
I think one of our bosses actually brought that up too and said he pretty much travels for free because he has very large ad buys where cards like that can get him extra points.
Exactly. That's especially for an online business owner. That's a huge benefit. So obviously you'd want to keep a card like that. A few more other examples of cards you'd want to keep. A lot of hotel cards have great annual benefits. So you might pay an annual fee, let's say $95 on a hotel credit card, but you're going to receive an annual free night. And the reason you can get outsized value for that annual free night is you pay $95 annual fee, but then you can redeem it for a $400 hotel night, maybe even more, maybe even a $500 hotel night. So it's not exactly free because you paid the $95 annual free fee, but you saved potentially $300 to $400. And
that was one of the reasonings for me getting that Amex Platinum personally, because a lot of their extra perks were things that I already purchased. And honestly, I've had the card about a month now, and the $700 annual fee has almost paid for itself based on before any miles, stuff that I already personally spend. Whereas I looked at the Chase Sapphire and there wasn't really anything on there that I thought applied to me. So I think everyone's spending is different. But personally, I think that was kind of one of the things that pushed me to the Amex Platinum, whereas there's all these other perks that I can get that I'm already spending money on anyways. So I think that was kind of my reasoning for getting that card.
Exactly. So much of all of the mile and points world, it's highly dependent on your own situation. I'll give one more example of a credit card you might want to keep. There's several American Airlines cards or United cards, Delta cards. And almost all of those credit cards give you a free checked bag when flying domestically. So for me,
that adds
one,
up too.
I don't fly. But for me personally, I don't fly in the US. I'm almost exclusively outside the US. And I never check a bag. So for me, that card makes no sense. I'm going to downgrade that card, keep to a no fee card, keep it forever to help it lengthen my credit history. So it doesn't make sense for me, but it might make sense for someone else.
So here's a question I have. How are you not on some do not give him a card list? Watch out for Trevor Wright, because he keeps applying for credit cards and then he uses all our points and we're losing money on this guy. None of these credit card companies have ever flagged you for anything?
No. And there's several reasons for that. So the kind of macro reason is that people forget just how much money these banks and credit card companies have. I mean, it's almost unimaginable the amount of money that is just flowing through their systems and their businesses. So we people like me who actually redeem miles and points and travel for free and take advantage of the benefits, we're a tiny, tiny percent of the people who go after these cards. Statistically, most people lose the game. I'm winning and they lose because they're carrying balances by spending irresponsibly. They're paying unnecessary annual fees, all these things that make the banks money. And another part of that is people forget that anytime you spend on a credit card, the bank or credit card company earns merchant fees.
Yep.
So anytime you spend, they make money. So they cannot lose. Either way, the banks are going to win. And another reason that despite doing this for over a decade, you know, even my parents, I've been approved for 156 credit cards. My parents each have been approved for about 140 each, I believe. And the banks are still giving us credit cards, sign-up bonuses. And the reason they are is that on paper, we follow the rules so carefully that we look like the ideal clients.
Sure.
So that's kind of sums up Mile Method, my business in a nutshell, is that if you follow the rules exactly as the banks have outlined them, they want to give you credit cards and they want to give you these bonuses. And that's how it works.
So tell us about your business model for Mile Method. You know, as you mentioned before, you're not just posting affiliate links and sign up offers. You actually need to vet people to be accepted into the program. So can you give us a little bit more information on what you're looking for an ideal client?
Yes. So the business model from the client's end is very simple. They tell me their top three destinations. And then I create a customized credit card application schedule with the exact links that they should apply for on the exact dates I tell them. And if they do that, they will earn enough bonuses for three almost free vacations. And we're talking luxury vacations, beach resorts, five-star hotels, business class if they choose, which why wouldn't you?
Sure.
And then I also have a lot of clients. So that's kind of how I position it to the average person is three almost free vacations. And that works out to about 1,000,000 miles. But I would say at this point, about half of my clients that I work with are digital nomads. They kind of travel all the time. They might not have specific destinations. And that's also my situation. So for those type of people, we just constantly go after the most valuable sign-up bonuses that are the most versatile for travel anywhere in the world.
And you're able to continually do this even after the first year. Can they expect the same amount of miles or roughly the same amount of miles in year two?
The service period is 18 months. And the reason it's 18 months is if you're doing this properly, which means that you're following every single bank's rules very carefully, and not only each bank's rules, but each individual credit card's rules, because every single card has its own eligibility requirements. In the 18th month, you've pretty much exhausted all the best sign-up bonuses. And then if you want to continue doing this for a decade like I have, you kind of have to cool off on the applications and let the eligibility requirements reset.
Okay.
So, but again, within 18 months, you can earn, by doing this properly, 1,000,000 miles or more. And that's not even including someone who might spend a lot of money per month on ad spend. And 1,000,000 miles is a lot of free travel. It's pretty ridiculous, actually.
And once you help these clients earn these miles, do you also help them find the best deals to utilize their points more properly?
Yes. And it's not something I put in neon lights and advertise everywhere because it is very time consuming. But that's what I found for my clients is that's really why they want to work with me, because a lot of people, they might have a lot of miles and points, but then just like you mentioned earlier, they don't know what they're worth. They don't know the best way to redeem them. So I would say I spend the majority of my day just helping clients book flights. even now I'm helping a couple travel to go to a wedding in Italy. This past month, I've helped people do safaris in Africa, honeymoons. It's and because my business model is word of mouth, my clients really appreciate when they can book, let's say, a $30,000 honeymoon for $300. That's a real example. And it just, everybody wins because they have this incredible honeymoon. They might tell their friends, I earn more clients. That's how it all works.
I think if you got an amazing honeymoon for $30, you're going to tell everybody, you know, so that makes sense. Well, we got to talk about it. I mean, you're not doing this for free. So what's your fee structure look like to provide this service to your clients?
It's a one-time payment of, and I'm not trying to do some type of advertisement for your listeners, but this is what I do. A little side note, I actually came up with the idea for this business in 2014 when I met Johnny.
That's nice.
Kind of a side story. It wasn't even my own idea.
I got a couple
idea,
questions so. From Johnny after this too, so it'd be interesting. So, again,
not pitching, but I kind of am. It's a $1,500 one-time fee, and that's an 18-month service period. And what that means is once I have someone's information, which would be basically their top three destinations, I create the customized credit card application schedule. Every 90 days, I just send them a quick email saying, hey, I've updated your links. Go apply for these cards. The client applies, which takes 20 to 30 minutes every 90 days. Once they're approved for the cards, they spend the next 90 days just focusing on the minimum spend requirements in order to unlock the bonuses. And then we do it over again every 90 days. And then in the meantime, they write me if they have questions and I help them out.
Awesome. It seems totally reasonable for the fee if you're able to deliver on these points and get some incredible travel out of the deal. Like I said, Johnny, our co-host here on Invest Like a Boss, did have a couple questions for you. This one, I don't know, at least being in the US, I don't have a problem doing this, but he might, where he lives, he usually lives in places where it's a lot cheaper to live. He says he has trouble hitting the $3,000 minimum to activate a sign-up bonus. How are people able to do it, especially with multiple cards? So it could be 3,000, 6,000, whatever the minimum is to reach the bonus. If you're telling people that they got to do that three times on three different cards, have you had anybody kind of have problems spending enough money to get the bonus?
Yeah, it is a legit concern. I'm more like Johnny, where I spend my time in Latin America. Johnny and I actually met up in Ukraine not too long ago. Well, 6 months ago, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a concern for people that, don't spend a lot of money. And unfortunately, the same, let's say, quote unquote, spending tricks or manufactured spending that used to be possible, 5 to 3 years ago, those same tricks are no longer valid for people outside the U.S. So unfortunately, because I do this pre-eligibility survey to see if someone is eligible, if they don't spend enough money per month just through their natural spending, this might not be a good fit. But there are a lot of people who have businesses or who live in the US and their monthly spending is pretty high, and they should really be allocating that spending towards earning the sign-up bonuses because it's free travel. It really is.
So that takes me to the next question, which is where I was until I just kind of figured I should be taking better advantage of this. Why not just sign up for a 2% cash back card or a certain percentage cash back card that is beneficial to you and something you spend a lot of money in, and just take the cash out of it instead of redeeming it for points? What do you tell people that say it's just easier just to get $100 back a month, something like that?
Well, they're just plain and simple. They're missing out on so much more money, free travel benefits. It's just much more lucrative to, instead of getting 2%, to allocate your normal spending towards earning sign-up bonuses. And I'll give you a real life example. So just yesterday, I was working here from the Hilton in Belize. A client had kind of a last minute flight. She needs to fly from New York to Paris. So I quickly responded and said, hey, found you a good option. This is a fairly common example, actually. It seems crazy, but this is totally feasible. The one-way business class from New York to Paris would normally cost $7,095. And the equivalent to book that is a single sign-up bonus. So how much do you have to spend to earn that sign-up bonus? Only $2,000. So what I'm trying to say is, if you spend $2,000, you earn a sign-up bonus that you can redeem for a $7,000 business class one way.
And I would argue that $2,000 was money you were going to spend anyways.
Exactly. So again, you allocate your normal spending. So let's take that same example. Let's say you wanted to pay for that exact same New York to Paris business class one way. So if you're trying to do that with a 2% credit card, and correct me if my math is wrong, but you would have to spend something like, let me double check.
Hold on, let me bust out the calculator.
you'd have to spend over $250,000, right? $300,000,
$350,000. Right? Yeah. $350,000 to get your free flight to Paris.
Yes. So think how crazy that is. If you're exclusively spending on a 2% cashback credit card to earn a $7,000 business class one way, you have to spend $350,000.
Well, when you put it that way, your math is starting to make sense here.
Or you spend $2,000, you get a quick sign-up bonus, and then you do it again. And you earn another quick sign-up bonus, and then you do it again. So the conversation really comes down to earning sign-up bonuses versus keeping your life extremely simple. Earning the sign-up bonuses, you have to be a bit more organized because you want to make sure that you are allocating your spend on the right card. You want to make sure that you're later downgrading or canceling to avoid, you know, unnecessary annual fees. But none of that is really that difficult. And especially with my clients, we have a Google Drive document. We keep everything on a spreadsheet. It's all organized. I remind them exactly when they should cancel, when they should downgrade. So again, you could spend $350,000 or $2,000 and get the exact same benefits. To me, it's obvious.
Yeah, I think that might help ring a bell in a couple of people's heads as well, too, that maybe what they're doing doesn't make the most sense. If you don't mind, we got a few questions from our Patreon members. These are kind of some of our biggest fans of Invest Like a Boss that we give them access to ask questions to guests. Sure. I got just a few of them, if that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear from Jeff first. Jeff Holmes asks, about 20 years ago, I and a lot of other travelers would do mileage runs where we would take cheap flights just to accumulate cheap air miles and reach premier airline status. For example, I flew LAX to Johannesburg and returned a day later. But most airlines changed their mileage programs, so mileage runs are no longer economical. Are there any airlines where it still makes economic sense to do mileage runs?
So this is outside of my wheelhouse, I guess, because my simple response would be, you shouldn't be paying for flights at all. because with these sign-up bonuses, you know, if you do it properly, you can with a million miles, you can cover flights for the foreseeable future, including business class. So the only way to earn airline elite status, like the reason people do these mileage runs, is you have to spend a certain amount or fly a certain amount to get, you know, elite status with an airline, but you're still paying out of pocket. So, and not only that, you're spending a lot of time. Like this guy said, he flew, I think, LAX to Johannesburg in a day and returned. That's not fun.
I'm tired just thinking about that.
So not only are you spending money out of pocket, which is money that you could invest or, you know, it's money, you could do anything with it, but you're also spending your time in an uncomfortable airplane away from family. It just, to me, there's a better way. And the better way is taking advantage of sign-up bonuses. So to answer the question directly, I pay no attention to that. I do have a friend who is a professional courier, and he does these crazy routes to earn and maintain elite status. But the reason it makes sense for him is because the courier company is paying for his flights to begin with.
Sure.
So for him, it's just anything on top of that is benefits. But for the average person or the average American who has decent credit scores and is eligible for sign-up bonuses, earn the sign-up bonuses. And if you want to fly business class or first class, just redeem more miles. That's it. That's the simple way.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like our next one, Evan Tavener, he's been pretty busy. He said he's abused the credit card point game and had 11 hard pulls on his credit. Is he getting shut off from getting new cards until they fall off? He says he recently got a denial with an 800 score, 100% payment history. Is there any solutions to help him get more cards? I don't know that he needs any more after 11, but...
Well, to be honest, 11 is, it's not bad. I mean, I apply for new cards every 90 days and 11 is that, that does not sound to be his issue. Because keep in mind, there's three different credit bureaus. So there's three different institutions that provide the banks and credit card companies with credit reports. So those 11 hard inquiries, they're not all on the same credit bureau. They're spread across three different credit bureaus. So
when these credit card companies pull your credit, they're only pulling from one of the three, not all three?
Generally, yes. Capital One, for example, pulls from all three, which is why I'm not a fan of Capital One. So I really, just based on this little information, it doesn't sound like the hard inquiries are the issue. It sounds like he's not applying properly. He's applying for the wrong cards in the wrong order. Maybe he hasn't studied up on the individual eligibility requirements of each card or the different bank eligibility requirements. So I always explain to people that to earn 1,000,000 miles within 18 months, it's like putting together a puzzle. And there's a correct way to do it and there's an incorrect way. If you do it the incorrect way, it's like losing puzzle pieces and you'll never get the complete picture. So you really have to know what you're doing in order to maximize the signup bonuses. And when each bonus is worth anywhere from, you know, $800 to even $10,000 if redeemed for a business class or first class one way, if you're missing out on bonuses, you might be missing out on $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So you want to make sure you do it right.
That makes sense. Last one here from Patreon. Daniel asks, it would be interesting if Trevor could say a few words about what options non-Americans have. Pretty much all these credit card offers are only available to Americans. So I'm wondering if it makes sense to think about non-Americans unless you're an ultra high frequency flyer. Any thoughts on options for people that aren't US citizens?
So I'm pretty overwhelmed with American clients. I really haven't paid too much attention to, say, the Canadian market or the UK market, which are really the only other countries that have some type of sign-up bonus system. And even then, the available offers that they have are a fifth or a tenth of the value of what's possible in the United States. So you really do need to be American with a US Social Security number and decent credit scores. With that said, because I don't know this person's full situation, I do have clients that are non-citizens. So I have a client from Spain, I have a client from the Bahamas, I have a client from the UK, and they're all doing incredibly well. They're earning sign-up bonuses as if they were a regular American client, but they have, you know, they've gone through the process of getting a social security number, residency, all those different things. So it's just not really my specialty to work with non-Americans because I'm pretty busy as it is.
I find it interesting that these offers, essentially, at least the amount of offers, really only apply to Americans. Do you know the reasoning for that? Why can't someone in Europe or Asia or wherever get access to these deals?
I've thought about this. I guess the way to say it is, why isn't the European Union, for example, off the banks in the EU, why aren't they offering such incredible bonuses if it's such a lucrative system for the banks? And the only thought I had is maybe the EU protects its citizens better from the predatory practices of banks.
We've all seen that, yeah.
Whereas in the US, the banks and the politicians are basically the same people. So I don't have a good answer for that, other than there's probably more restrictions and protections in the EU than in the US.
Okay, so before we get out of here, it's a fun question. We like to end it on a fun note. First trips that come to mind that were the most amazing deals you've ever got. How much did you spend? Where did you go? What did you get?
Okay. Since we messed up the time zones today, I didn't actually have that much time to prepare for this conversation, but I did make a note of just some of the business class and first class flights that I've flown that came to mind. So I will still die on this hill that it's not about the flights or the hotels. It's about the destination. You know, are you going to meet up with friends? Are you going to go to some incredible location? With that said, if you can fly Emirates first class for $83, like I did from Bangkok to Dallas, like that's a very memorable experience. And I listed some of the other ones here. So I've flown Cathay Pacific first class from Denver to Hong Kong for $6. I'll tell you the miles.
$6?
So Denver to Hong Kong for 77,500 American Airline miles plus $6. And I think that's normally like a $13,000 one way, probably more.
Wow. Yeah.
I've flown them twice. I flew Cathay Pacific first class from LA to Bali for 70,000 Alaska Airline miles plus $75. I've flown Etihad first class, which was amazing, from Abu Dhabi to Casablanca, Morocco, for 40,000 American Airline miles plus $22. I flew from Sao Paulo, Brazil to Rwanda on Ethiopian business class for 45,000 United miles plus $79. I could go on and on and on. The point is that when you have these miles and points, it sounds a little bit cliche, but the world is your oyster. You can go where you want, when you want, because you're not worried about the flight price. And not only that, once you arrive to a destination, you're not going to go to some dirty hostel bed. You might end up in the Hilton or the Park Hyatt. And that's also very possible once you have the miles and points.
Yeah, this is amazing to know that, you know, you can upgrade your trip where you might have gone somewhere anyways. You can just elevate that experience even more for even less money. So this, it almost seems too good to be true, Trevor, but I mean, you have the proof. So I got,
yeah. And I will say this, that what you just said is my main obstacle is that, And I will say this, my website is due for an update because I have all these incredible testimonials and screenshots, all those different flights I just told you. I have screenshots proof, but I don't have them on my website. It's all on Instagram, saved as Instagram stories. But most people, it is true. They think that this is not possible. Like, why should this exist? And there are lots of reasons it does exist. And that's why they never really investigate further to realize that they could do it too. They really can. All you need is a US social security number, decent credit scores, which means 700 or above, and the desire to travel. That's really it.
Yeah, I think that's going to really relate with our audience here. Last question before we get out of here. What do you see these points programs looking like, let's say 10 years from now? Do they continue business as usual? Will they be even more generous or less generous? What are you kind of seeing on the horizon in these programs?
Well, nobody can predict the future, obviously, but I've been doing this for over a decade. And one of the givens is that the inflation just in the world, but also in miles and points will continue. So that's not necessarily something to be concerned about because as, let's say, the flight redemptions increase, so do the sign-up bonuses. Because remember, for a lot of airlines, their mile program is the most profitable sector of their entire business model, which is kind of crazy that airlines don't make all of their money flying passengers around the world. They make it by selling miles to banks. And that's kind of a separate conversation. So inflation is a given, you know, 5 years from now, probably less, you know, all the different flight redemptions will go up, but so will the sign-up bonuses. So you don't want to be sitting on your miles and points. You want to earn the bonuses and redeem them for incredible experiences. Don't sit on them. Don't save them. Just like you should not be sitting on US dollars, you should be investing. So where will the programs be in 10 years? Probably the same because it is such a profitable thing for banks and airlines and hotels to do. The main difference might be is with technology, they might get better at shutting down the loopholes. So maybe what I'm doing now it just won't be possible. You never know, because they have the technology. They've just been very lazy about implementing it because we're such a tiny percent of the people gaming the system. But sure. as awareness becomes bigger, as all these blogs have more readers, it's going to be in their business interest to shut down the people who are really gaming the system. So it might get harder, which is all the more reason to do it now. Like, get the bonuses, travel. Why not? It's this amazing thing that's available to Americans, and you definitely should be taking advantage.
Well, sorry for exposing your secret to everybody on Invest Like a Boss. But in that case, you bosses better get out there and check out Trevor's site. It's milemethod.com if you want to get in some trips that are going to save you a lot of money. You also mentioned your Instagram. Where else can people find you, Trevor?
That's it. I'm a pretty horrible marketer, if I'm being honest. I only do Instagram stories, but I do them obsessively. So anytime I'm
what's your handle on Instagram?
Mile Method. So just same as my website, Mile Method on Instagram. And if you ever want to see what's possible, anytime I book a free hotel, I do a room tour, and I always put the retail price versus the point price. I'm constantly putting client testimonials. I actually saved a bunch. Just in the past couple of months, I have clients booking $20,000 trips for $500, $30,000 trips for $1,000. It is wild what's possible. So check out the Instagram, and it might inspire some people.
I'm actually going to go do that right after this. Trevor, I really appreciate your time. Once again, he's with Mile Method, milemethod.com, Instagram at Mile Method. Thank you so much for coming out and Invest Like a Boss.
It was fun. Thank you for having me.
So Derek, would you sit on a plane for 18 hours to Johannesburg to turn straight back just to get some bonuses?
Well, first of all, shout out Jeff for that question. He's a big fan of the show. We all know who Jeff is. And no would be the answer. No.
I remember one of the other point travel hacker guys. I forgot which one, but he was basically bragging that he got a flight, like a first class flight from somewhere in the US to Australia and back for, pennies, these points. And I was like, you couldn't pay me to sit on a plane, even in first class, to go all the way to Australia for, I don't even think he left the airport, to be honest. What if he did, it was like there for like a day and go straight back. It sounds like torture to me. I'd rather fly economy and just pay out of pocket than have to sit, on that crazy long flight just to get, some cool reward for it.
Yeah. And one thing I forgot to ask that a friend of mine had brought up after I did the interview was there's a lot of restricted and blackout dates to these flights. So sure, you got a flight to Australia or Johannesburg for $50, but if you had to turn around and fly back 12 hours later, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it's just bragging rights. I think people, just like the idea of flying, first class or business class, taking those photos, having that, that experience. But I liked how Trevor said it. He said it's not about just the flight. It's about, going somewhere that you actually wanted to go anyways, to travel or to see, family or friends or to go to a wedding or something. So I would definitely say don't waste your time or CO2 to just travel for the sake of it. Like, you use the system to travel where you're going to go anyways, and then maybe do it, in more comfort or, maybe for free. Actually, speaking of which, have you ever flown business class, Derek?
I haven't, honestly. I've literally been stuck in the coach every time.
All right. So I can tell you this. Once you start flying business class, especially in long haul flights with lay down seats, you'll never want to go back to economy. It's so much nicer. Like, from the thought of going from LA to Thailand, and being on like a 12 or 14 hour flight and sitting upright in economy, it sucks. So those flights, I 100% recommend it. And the difference between business nowadays and first is really just a privacy curtain or door. So I would never pay for first class. It's just not worth it. Like, the way that the pricing normally works is business class is normally four times as expensive as economy. And sometimes it could be worth it. But first class, it's 20x, 20 times more expensive than economy, and it's never worth it.
Yeah, honestly, when I walk by first class or like business class on a flight, it doesn't seem to be that much different. I will tell you one example where coach turned out to be better than business class. And I specifically remember it. It's probably never going to happen again. But on my way back from visiting you in Ukraine, I was at the airport and they said, you know, if you want to upgrade to business class, I think it was like $500. And I was really considering it because I was just like, ah, oh, that's a long flight, you know? And then I was like, no, that's still a lot of money. And I was like, I can do it. I made it here just fine. And I've done these long flights before in coach. And I get on the plane, you know, the first half of the plane is all business class people. The seats look nice. They're lay down seats, but it's full, right? Then there's a curtain. I get to the back of the plane. I'm in economy and there's no one there. Oh, so I'm like, oh, this is interesting. So they put me in a row with, I think, 5 seats. Mm-hmm. I had the entire row, Johnny. I laid across all these seats and they were flat too. There weren't like armrests in the way. Mm-hmm. And I literally just slept for like half the flight. Meanwhile, these business class people, they had a lay down seat, but I had more room than them for sure.
You know what? Now I've been lucky and I've had full rows myself a bunch of times, especially in this last 2 years during COVID when planes were mostly empty. But you're right. Where mm-hmm. I would rather have the middle 4 seats to myself than maybe even a business class seat, to be honest, especially to save the money. I did once actually give up my premium economy seat, which was like a slightly bigger, slightly wider, nicer seat, to go lay down the back because there was an empty row.
So I want to know too. I want to know your thoughts on the points guy, because obviously Trevor had thoughts. I have thoughts that I think a lot of people are very naive to what affiliate links are. And I see these links and I can just tell they're getting paid. I didn't know how much. He said per application that they get off a link, the points guy or whoever it may be is getting between $50 and $400 per click and application. I'm just thinking how many millions and millions of people see that content every day and how much money they have to be making, because it's huge numbers then. And now I see why all their articles are loaded with affiliate links.
Yeah. I used to be an affiliate, not for airline miles, but just kind of for other things. And it's one of those tricky things where if you are recommending good, like let's say it wasn't the points guy, but let's say, Derek, you know, you were like, you know what? I spent 4 days doing research to see what was the best, you know, credit card to travel with, and you took the time to write a blog post and they happen to have an affiliate link, and you can get credit for referring people. And it was really was the best option. Then I'm more than happy to use your link. You know, I'm actually happy to click it because it incentivizes you to create more content and take the time to recommend things, right? But the problem is a lot of people like the points guy and other people, like they basically just find the highest paying links, and then they write an article around that and they try to like just say, you know, this is why you should do this one, you know, and it sucks.
And I personally felt a little burned now because I brought it up in the interview, but I've been thinking about getting that Amex Platinum card for a while because a lot of the other side benefits is stuff I already spend money on. So it just kind of made sense to do it. And a friend of mine had the card and said, you know, if I refer you, you get 100,000 points. I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And then I got another offer that was 125,000. So I was like, okay, this is the highest I've ever seen. I'm going to jump on that. I apply for it. I put a little mention in the boss lounge about it. And then Trevor chimes in and says, I could have got you 150,000. And now I'm just like, I feel really jaded about this whole process, that it's kind of just waving these different offers around where it's like, let's see which one they bite on.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of just the name of the game, right? And it is a game. We often forget that credit card companies, you know, like for every one person like Trevor who, you know, has played the game well, has never got caught, there's going to be, you know, someone who messes up, they miss a payment, you know, they forget to cancel, you know, something happens and they end up paying a lot of money or getting really screwed. And that's how these credit card companies survive. And even though I'm pretty diligent about keeping track of things, I swear to you, every time, every like year that I tell myself, okay, I'm going to open another card just to get the bonus. I'm going to be very diligent on it. I'm going to cancel it in time. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to pay it off in time. I end up messing up, or something ends up messing up where it just, I end up getting screwed.
I'm the same way too. Like, I pay off my credit card. Actually, I don't even wait for the monthly bill. I pay it every week. But when you have all these cards, everything now too is about the subscription. Think about it. You know, Netflix, Microsoft, even Zoom that we're talking to on right now. I just paid that bill. And it's all on an auto pay subscription. So if you linked an old card, which I had happen recently with Microsoft, and then you, as a card I don't even use anymore, and then all of a sudden I get a notice that my bill wasn't paid and now I got a late fee and all this extra charges. I was like, wait, I haven't used that card in like at least a year. And if you don't keep track of every little bill or move things over, and I don't even have that many cards. I have like 5 or 6 cards. Trevor has 156 cards. How do you, you just got to be really diligent and disciplined about moving everything and making sure it's all lined up. And that's a lot of cards to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes it's not even your fault. Like, for example, the card that I opened a few months ago, I did it for the sign-up bonus. It was through Bank of America, a small business. And it was something like, you know, if I spend $3,000 in 3 months, I'll get $800 in cash. And I thought, you know what? That's easy. Let's do that. Mm-hmm. First, I didn't hit the minimum because I just couldn't spend $3,000. I mean, and maybe that's a good sign up, but I just couldn't hit the minimum. So I didn't get it. Meanwhile, when I tried to pay the bill on bankofamerica.com, I went through the whole process of paying and it never got paid. Instead, they somehow wrote me a paper check for that amount to send to my PO box, which, you know, came, you know, a month later. And then I had to have my mom deposit that into B of A to pay the bill. How insane is that?
We still run into those issues too with the podcast here, as people will like write paper checks. I'm like, what year is it?
And like Bank of America's website is so terrible that I'm sure like, you know, that's not how you, like, I'm sure that's not how everyone pays their B of A credit cards. Like, but I, even though, you know, just because like somehow that's what I ended up clicking, or, and that even being an option is just so archaic to me that,
but you know, what, maybe they're doing it on purpose, Johnny, because think of how many times it gets messed up or screwed up and they can tack on extra fees onto that.
Oh, they did. And then I had to waste 30 minutes on the phone with them to try to waive that and then close the card. And so I ended up wasting, you know, an hour of my life, lots of stress, you know, risking a late fee, and I ended up getting nothing for it.
So that kind of transitions into Trevor's business model. What did you think? $1,500, 18 months, every 90 days, he'll get you a card. And he'll also like maybe take some of this time off your hands to find you these amazing travel deals. You tell him, hey, in the next year, I want to go to these 3 places. How can you help me fly there for free, or essentially free? And he'll get the cards you need and then also find you the deals. So what do you think about the price of that?
So I have a couple of thoughts, right? So first off, the problem with valuing, you know, a $7,000 business class flight is the fact that you never would have spent $7,000 to buy a one-way business class flight.
Right.
So the actual value of that is what you would have actually paid if you...
Which would have been, for me, economy class, whatever that ticket costs.
Yeah, and whatever you would have paid for an upgrade, right? So like for me, the maximum value for a one-way business class flight anywhere in the world is $2,000, you know, maybe 2,500 or something, right?
Sure.
Which is still a lot of money, but, you know, like I think, you know, sometimes when we see kind of like these big numbers, we're like, oh, wow, you know, we saved $15,000. I'm like, no, I never would have spent that, you know? Second is, even though it's very nice to fly business class, it really isn't a necessity. Like I made a decision to downgrade from flying business all the time to flying coach. And it was like a financial decision where I told myself, if I allow myself to just make these sacrifices, I can just work less. I can stop working 50 hours a week running all these businesses. I can sell my stores. I can just like chill out and just kind of live off investment income, you know. And the sacrifice was I can't fly business class anymore. And that's something I was willing to do. And even though it's not as comfortable, I'm 100% okay with it. So it is fun to fly business class, but it's definitely not a necessity. So that being said, I personally don't think, you know, most people really need to do this, but if you're going to do it, I think his system is much better than going through, you know, trying to piece it together through like points guys or any of those things. Cause you probably end up getting that. So I see value. Actually, I have a friend, and he's also a listener to the podcast, David Swarner, and he swears by it. He's always posting, you know, these deals he got from Trevor. So he's one of Trevor's clients, and he's absolutely happy with it.
And I think this is really good for a lot of bosses out there that you kind of touched on it earlier, that if it's a place you were already going to go to and the dates make sense and everything else makes sense and lines up, this is great. Or the other person it works great for is someone like Trevor that doesn't have a home base. I asked Trevor, I was like, so where do you normally stay? And he's like, wherever I end up. So he's kind of like you, Johnny, I guess. And someone like that, where you're not forced into a rigid place you have to go, or there's an event you have to go to, and you just want to travel the world and you can work remotely. This is where I think that would really come in nicely as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, David's like that. You know, he's retired, I think Navy, and he basically just says, you know what, where do I want to go this month? And, you know, he probably just calls Trevor saying, no, like, where can you fly me business class? And then he'll book like a hotel, you know, like a nice hotel somewhere on Airbnb for a month, put it on his credit card. And that's probably how he makes the $3,000 spend. And yeah, it definitely works, you know, for some people. I can see it being a fun hobby as well, but I don't know. Like, for me personally, I think it ends up being more of a full-time or part-time job. And for me, that's not something I want to take on.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do like the credit card points light program. But I'm happy if I can get one or even two trips paid for in a year, I'm happy with that. He says, you know, you can pretty much guarantee three trips a year. As far as the flight and the business class, I know I said I haven't flown it. And the reason is that, you know, I'd rather spend that extra money I was going to spend on a nice hotel or experiences when I'm actually in the city. In my head, you know, even the worst flights in the world, they're done in the same day or less than 24 hours. And I can make it through that. And then I can have a nice, big, comfy bed to get into and probably spend still a third of the price as that business class ticket would have cost.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the truth is, you know, I've been on a lot of flights with a lot of random airlines, and I've never been on an international flight that was actually that uncomfortable. You know, nowadays, most of them have a TV screen. You know, most of them are like okay enough, right? And then, you know, worst comes to worst, you know, you bring, you know, some of your own food or water on board, you know, you watch a movie on your iPhone. Like, we literally all have, you know, TV screens.
We all have TVs in our hands. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's no longer that bad anymore. The worst flight I actually had ever was a flight from, it was actually from Thailand back to like LA, but that first part was great. But then it's had a layover in Hawaii. And I didn't realize this, but once we land in Hawaii, we're back in the US. So it becomes a domestic flight.
So a long flight. That's a long flight. So that's about 6 hours still from Honolulu to LA.
Yeah. And it was the most uncomfortable domestic flight I've ever had. Actually, maybe it was to San Francisco, so maybe it was even longer, but it was so uncomfortable. It's like,
I didn't even think about that because, yeah, it feels like going way out there is an international level plane, but yeah, you're right. It's just a domestic flight.
Yeah, especially after you've already been on a plane for 8 hours.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to check out more about Trevor, his Instagram is the best place. He said his website's a little outdated. He's working on it, but there's good info there as well. MileMethod.com. But check out his Instagram. He's got he's got cool stories and like screenshots of actual flights he's booked for like $20. You can go pretty much anywhere in the world. It's pretty cool stuff. It's at Mile Method.
All right, awesome. So Derek, fun talking to you. Yeah, anything else kind of going on?
I think that's it. We mentioned it last week that you guys were kind of slacking on reviews. We did get a couple more in. I should probably read one here. But it really helps the show if you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts, just leave a 5-star review. Or Spotify now has reviews. And I think I read somewhere that at least in the United States, more people are listening to podcasts on Spotify than Apple. So if you guys are listening on there, thank you. Leave a 5-star review and shout out to Dave. He said, Johnny and Sam bring the best interviews with CEOs, FinCon, entrepreneurs, and big bosses. My favorite part of the episodes, though, are the intros and outros where they share their personal investment strategies, where in the world they are, and what they've been up to. Always nice to see another iLab episode in my iTunes. Well, I think we covered all those bases in that episode. So that's all I got, Johnny. How long are you staying in Ukraine? We should bring that up because I'm sure people are curious.
It's probably just going to be a week. I think it's going to be a week because I do need to get my stuff out of my Airbnb that I'm still paying for in Poland. And then I have another trip coming up next month. So we can save that for another episode.
All right, great. Well, you stay safe out there. I'm glad that your place is okay in Kiev and that it stays that way. And this thing will hopefully be over sooner than later. With that, though, I'll talk to you next week, Johnny.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.